Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 4 of the Green Flag Weekly Podcast. As ever, we've got a lot to get through today, including game news, product news, and of course the league roundups. So with me to help get through all the action today, we've got two very special guests, once again joined by Ryan Callan and the new guest Scott Woodwist. So how are you today, guys?
How's it going, man?
I'm good, thanks, Liam.
Awesome, it's all good. So we'll quickly get into the game news then. So quite a lot's happened this week, obviously, as we approach a sort of not gaming festivals, but you've got the sort of E3, you've got Gamescom coming up very shortly. A lot of trailers are starting to come out and screenshots and announcements, and this has really kind of boosted the sim racing community. Now, the first one being the Grid 2 trailer. Now, they released a trailer on the 8th of August, and it was short but sweet. It was around a minute long, but there's, lots of little sneaky clips in there. I did do an analysis of that, and that's on my channel, and it looks great. We had a big discussion about Grid 2 in the last podcast, but it looked very promising. You've still got all the livery designs, plenty of cards. There's an Expo in there. I think there's an Ariel Atom at times. You've got a Mustang, all that sort of thing. It's released in 2013, but the thing is, there's been a huge debate at the moment, is that have Codemasters made the decision or no? But it's rumored that they've made the decision to not add a cockpit view. Now, if that's true, how much of an impact is that going to have on game sales?
That's a little bit lazy, but I don't think it's going to have much of an impact. Simply because it's going to be a game for the arcade type people anyway, and I'm not sure how many of the arcade type people racing cockpit view.
Yeah, I mean, it's very weird. I mean, for me, Grid was probably my first proper sim racing game, and being in the cockpit view in the touring cars really, so it was my first sort of almost door opening into sim racing. So to play that, and not have that feature in Grid 2 is it's a bit
Liam,
weird.
Liam, Liam, calling it a sim racing game? Really?
Oh.
Go and sit in the corner and give yourself a good talking
I was young, okay.
to.
But I mean, apart from that, I mean, the game looks fairly promising, but we'll have to see what happens. Apparently, there's, I think, an actual member in the forum said Codemasters are lying to their community and a chance to build up hype. So when they go, oh, it's all lies, it is coming in. So everyone goes, hooray, and gets really excited over it. But we'll have to wait and see what happens at Gamescom. Talking of Gamescom, F1 2012 have had two trailers released. One of them just came out today, of course, a developer diary, and the Champions Mode trailer as well. Now, the Champions Mode trailer is a mode, obviously, for champions, and basically what it is that you face all six champions on the grid in a series of events. So I think, for instance, the Kimi Raikkonen one is it's pouring down with rain at Spa. You pit in, get tires, you've got to carve your way through the field and beat that champion. And then for each champion you beat, you move on to the next one. So it's sort of like an arcadey sort of take on it, but it's definitely looking promising. And developer diary looks really good from what I've seen. We're starting to see a lot more footage of other tracks now as opposed to the Circuit of America. And I know, Scott, you were very happy with that developer diary. So what are your thoughts on F1 2012 so far?
I think it looks absolutely fantastic. I think graphically they've made a fantastic step up in terms of how it looks. I think that in terms of, we don't know exactly how the physics are going to be like. I know that Codemasters have openly come out and said that it's never going to be like iRacing, and I don't think anyone expects it to. I think they're trying to cater more to the console market, probably because they even mentioned in the trailer, but they've adjusted the controls so it's a bit more controller friendly. Now, whether or not that's going to be have a massive effect on the physics and how the game feels when you're racing with the wheel remains to be seen. But I think overall the game looks really good. I think the young driver test mode is really good to introduce people who maybe they casually watch Formula One or they want to play the game but they've never really played a racing game before. I think it's a good way to introduce them to Formula One as to how a Formula One car feels, how it works. And I think it should be a pretty promising title. I think also quickly just going back to the Grid 2 thing, in terms of not including a cockpit view, just to get my view on it. There was a post by the executive producer, I think it was, of the game, saying that 95, only 5% of their user base use cockpit view from what they've found. So, and what they're doing is apparently they're saying that if they take out cockpit view, it'll help them to use the extra processing power that it would have used towards things like better weather effects, smoother frame rate, and better kind of graphics in terms of drawing distances, that kind of thing. So, I think people have to cut Codemasters a bit of slack here. The fact, because they're working on three games at the moment. They've got F1 2012, they've got Grid 2, and they've got F1 Race Stars, don't forget, as well. So they're working incredibly hard, and also the fact they've now dedicated themselves just to racing games. So I think a lot of people write off Codemasters, I think, a bit too quickly before they even try the game. I see a lot of people, especially when they got to F1 2011, when they were saying, oh, no, I'm not going to buy F1 2011 because, you know, it's not going to have realistic physics, it's going to be rubbish. Well, how do you know? How can you tell how good or bad a game is before you even play it? I mean, granted, there's one or two games you play after 5 minutes. I have in the past couple of racing games, and they feel terrible. I've never played them again. But I think it's unfair just to judge a game just on the first look. I think a lot of people forget that when you see them, that's not the finished product. They're still either pre-alpha or beta or that kind of stuff. So people think judge too quickly. But yeah, F1 2012 looks absolutely fantastic. And I think that it's going to go from strength to strength. And I think that come September 21st, that I believe is the date it's coming out, I think it's going to be pretty good. I think this is definitely going to be the best one in the series yet.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is as well with the F1 license is that the FIA is very strict in what you can do. Now, if you remember back to, you know, when Studio Liverpool were making them, you know, up to F106, you know, it was a very good game, I felt. But with Codemasters getting it, they're still trying to break into the license. And you're not going to be able to just take round, you know, Sebastian Vettel's championship-winning car, smash it into a barrier to see what, you know, the sort of damage effects you have. You know, they can have to slowly ease their way in. I know, for instance, you know, Forza 4 have got the Jeremy Clarkson sort of views around the cars and the insights. This year, Anthony Davidson in F1 actually does a hot lap thing. So each circuit has a dedicated video for the hot lap. So Anthony Davidson takes you with a ride on board to discuss corners, braking points. And again, that's a nice feature for drivers who perhaps don't know the tracks and just want to get, you know, start getting straight in racing, learn the braking points and just try and aid their sort of competitive nature a bit. And I think that slowly, the more that's coming with the license over the next few years, it's going to get better. But people straight away, as soon as Codemasters got the license, expected this fantastic best sim ever sort of F1 game, and they can't do that because, you know, of the license restrictions. But slowly they're improving. F1 2011 was a huge improvement with the safety car, and if they keep going in that direction with 2012, like you said, I think it's definitely going to be their best attempt yet. So on to the next bit of gaming news then. This one comes from Simbin. If you remember back a couple of episodes ago, we were talking about Simbin releasing various screenshots of tracks, including Bathurst and a couple of others. But we all thought, or were under the illusion, that it was going to be for GTR 3. But it looks like we may have been proven wrong. They've actually announced a game called Race Room Racing Experience. Now, what this is a new free-to-race concept. So it's sort of like your Sim Raceway kind of thing, with the opportunity to purchase additional content, you know, to the cars and the tracks and that sort of thing. But if the screenshots are of that and not GTR 3, then it's going to, you know, probably be very good for a free-to-race as well. It's going to get a lot more people trying to try it out if it's free and perhaps purchase the latter content. But the only thing is, I think, is that a lot of people were hoping for a GTR 3, and that may upset them a little bit.
I've got to say, I was kind of already a little bit of insider knowledge there. I knew that was happening. So I wasn't surprised at all when I heard that's going out. So I don't think GTR 3 will ever happen, especially with the way Simbin have got difficulties with their money at the moment. They need an actual proper investor, somebody who has, you know, kind of a sugar daddy almost, for their studio, for GTR 3 to come along. I mean, it does look very good. The shots for Race Room Experience, that also race, will we still be using the G-Motor 2 engine? The one that they have licensed for, the one that they own, which is the engine they use obviously in GTR 2 and in the race series. But they've done wonders with the graphics and the lighting, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely looking very good. I mean, I know, you know, there's a lot of hype around, oh, could these screenshots finally be a GTR 3? But I think, again, you've hit the nail on the head in terms of, you know, the financial thing. But it'll be interesting to see what Race Room kind of handles. There will be additional content shown at Gamescom. And of course, there'll be trailers, the opportunity to play it. So I think, you know, we may have to have a sort of Gamescom special within the next couple of weeks, because there's going to be a lot of things, a lot of developers, new games going to be there. And one of those, of course, is Assetto Corsa. Now, they're being totally available to try at Gamescom with the brand new Fanatec Club Sport wheel with the Formula Rim. Huge, huge hype about this. This is probably one of the first opportunities for people to try the alpha build in person. You're going to see a lot of YouTube footage, maybe people reviewing this. I'm sure Inside Sim Racing will be there. But it's definitely going to be the first chance for the public to see how it handles with that rig. You've got a proper rig set up. It's a dedicated thing. and how it looks as a sim, but right now there's a lot of hype about that, and it's definitely looking to be probably the game to watch there at Gamescom in terms of sim racing.
Has anyone got a free ticket to Cologne, please?
I mean, it's definitely, I think, out there now, and it's got that fan base behind it, and it's just waiting now. I mean, this is going to, as we said, the first opportunity for fans to try it. Perhaps people who aren't really into sim racing will now get to just go there. People who are there for FIFA or something, perhaps, can just go there and go, okay, that looks kind of cool, like a simulator. They get in it, find, actually, that's really, really cool. And you've got possibly one of the best simulations out there to try as well. You've got the best wheel out there, arguably. And it's,
so it's got those great graphics as well, which pulls people in. Mm. The only problem with it, Assetto Corsa, is it just sounds too good to be true. I'm just waiting for the catch. Waiting for the catch.
Well, we'll have to see what happens, but... Were you going to say something then, Scott, or...?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a fantastic... They're probably going to come out and say, it's a fantastic game, obviously. It's put in all this physics, but you guys paid $200 for it. That's what the catch is going to be. It's going to be too overpriced. Just for, I think it's quite interesting because all the kind of the bits and pieces they're seeing, always, if you watch the simrace.tv broadcast, you see they have an advert they play before some of them. And they've got all these bits and pieces like you've got how many different types of cars and tracks is going to be, all like the realistic lighting, all the physics and everything like that. And I think possibly Assetto Corsa has the potential, and this is a big claim, but I think possibly has the potential to possibly be the next R Factor. Obviously, I know there's R Factor 2 coming out, and they're developing that, and that's looking fantastic as well. But if you see what I mean there, the kind of the next kind of big kind of open source, kind of like sandbox sim to come out. I think R Factor kind of set the benchmark, and I think now effectively, I'm not sure if you can really call iRacing a sandbox because you can't mod it the cars. Obviously, it's more one of those you can pick and choose your experience as to how you want it. But I think Assetto Corsa looks like to be a similar grounding to R Factor, where essentially you just buy the base sim, and then obviously the content comes from the community. The cars, the tracks, you know, the heads up display mods, things like that. They all come from the community in terms of creating them. And I think possibly that if it's marketed and produced in the right way, as it looks to be, I think we could be on our hands to a really good sim here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you touched on a good point there. And that brings us to our next point. Our Factor 2, you know, we've discussed this in various podcasts now. And I think it's been a bit of a shame, really. People don't seem too impressed with it, or they feel a bit let down. And, you know, ISI doing their best at the moment. And they did actually release a video very, very recently. I think it was today, of the Sunrise video using the Formula Renault 3.5. And again, it looks great, but it's whether it feels right, you know. I mean, it looks fantastic. Obviously, you've got all the weather coming into it. And I think it possibly would be an improvement over R Factor. But I think, as we've discussed before, Ryan, it's not at the moment what the, you know, fan base wanted it to be.
No, it's not. The single player is definitely there, and then for the single player people, I think they're having a ball already with it. I mean, there's a few graphical glitches, but you can live with that. But as a multiplayer, it's a big letdown.
Well, we'll have to see what happens. Obviously, Gamescom coming up. Maybe we'll see, you know, maybe another announcement trailer from R Factor 2, or a little sneaky preview of some screenshots. Another thing as well, we spoke a couple of weeks ago about the Automaniacs controversy and what happened, you know, with the whole Porsche thing, and they were at the German GP testing it out. Another thing which was sneakily spotted by someone in the screenshots of the event, on the sim racing rigs, they had the Fanatec Club Sport wheel, but obviously at the moment you've only got the BMW, you know, little rim or the Formula rim. They were using a Porsche rim. Now, could this be something in the works? Or is this something custom for that event? Because obviously Fanatec do have the Porsche licenses, but is that another wheel? Because you've already got, you know, the BMW GT rim. Do they really need a Porsche one?
Go ahead, Scott.
Oh, okay. Was it my turn? Okay. Porsche rim. It's interesting because, of course, they, as you said, they have the Porsche license. They've done the turbo wheel, the Carrera, the GT3, the GT3 RS with the GT2, of course. So I don't know. I think there is such a case you can have one too many wheels. But of course, it gives more choice for people. So if they're not particularly a BMW fan, I don't want a Formula Race style wheel, then of course they can have a Porsche wheel. I mean, I don't think I've seen pictures of it myself. I'm not sure if it's kind of more like one of the road going car wheels, so it's more something like the wheel you get in a Porsche 911 GT3 Cup car. I don't know, but I think it's, I don't know, it's probably going to be, I think really Fanatec, obviously they have a reputation for making, be one of the best wheel makers out there. And I think that obviously that reputation precedes them with all the list of worlds they've made. But I think really there has to be a line drawn, I think, as to how many worlds they can have. Because, of course, I think Logitech, I mean, they've only got one at the moment, of course, which is really, well, about two or three, I have to say, really, because they've got the DFGT and they've got the G27, and Thrustmaster are starting to get a few more worlds out as well. But I think Fnatic, maybe, while having the choice is good, maybe they're possibly just kind of having one too many. And, of course, I think having one too many worlds could mean they could start maybe eventually there'll be one world which no one will go for, and it may be a bit of a flop. But I don't know, we'll have to wait and see if it is, if there's any truth to that Porsche world, or whether it was just like a one-off thing for that event.
That's why I let Scott answer that question, because I get lost with the amount of wheels that Fnatic have.
I think as well, actually, I know Ryan will be quite excited about this. Back in October, Rights of Studios, of course, the makers of Game Stock Car, actually announced they were going to make a Senna game, but it's been kind of quiet since then. We haven't really heard much from them, but they have had an interview, and they have made a brand new engine for it. The interview can be found on various news sites, such as, you know, Race Department, Virtual R, that sort of thing. But it's looking promising. Obviously, they've had a big task in getting Game Stock Car 2012 out there. But it could be a long way until you get, you know, a fully Ayrton Senna sim. But I think it's definitely looking in the right direction. I'm sure, I know, Ryan, you're, you know, very much a fan of Rights of Studio. So would they be the guys you want to make a sort of Senna sim?
Absolutely. Them or of course, Kuno Simulazioni. I can't even say that word. The guys who make a set of course for Netcar Pro. The difficulties they're having with, of course, and no one really thought about this before, I don't think, is that if it's going to be a Senna career, then it's pretty much throughout Formula One, and there's about 15 years of licenses and some and cars they're going to have to try and sort out in one way or another. So that's going to be very, very difficult indeed for them to sort out. So we might see very slow progress on that licensing front. That's what they said in the interview.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think if they can get this nailed, you know, I don't think the fans will matter if they wait a year or if they wait 5 years, because if that does come out, that is possibly going to be one of the greatest ideas, and we'll see how it holds up as a game, but it will be utterly fantastic to play through the career of Ayrton Senna. If they could nail it and perhaps get the go-karts in there, obviously Senna was Brazilian, if you got perhaps his Brazilian car tracks in there to start off when he started go-karting years ago, and then play through from there and get him up through the ranks into Formula One, that would be probably the dream game for a lot of Formula One fans.
The best bit would be trying to win the karting world championship, which Senna never managed to do. So if we could do that, that would be one of the things I'd like to do on the game. If they involve the karting as well, of course.
Well, we'll have to see what happens, right? I mean, obviously, again, Games One coming up. We may see something, you know, like a little announcement, but as you said, still a long way to go with all the licensing and things. But I think that just about rounds out the game news. Onto the product news, there's only two real bits, actually. The first one being Thrustmaster have released two new previews, one of them just showing a garage door opening, and the second one, we actually see the wheel. So they have announced a new wheel. It's for the Xbox 360, and it looks extremely similar to the 458 Italia. For those who aren't very familiar with it was kind of not really a budget wheel, but it was a step down from, you know, the Fnatic wheels, but it looked extremely nice. Okay, it was modeled on the Ferrari 458 Italia. You had the kind of a Manettino switch on there to switch all between your settings. The actual paddles on them felt extremely good, but the pedals didn't have a clutch. You know, they had a kind of slippy feel to them and squeaked a bit after use. But if they can just, you know, take that, tweak it a little bit, make improvements, I think they could be onto a very, very good wheel there.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the pricing as well, of course, and whether it'll be compatible on the PC. Hopefully it will be, because I've got a DFGT from Logitech, and of course that was designed for the PlayStation. But it works perfectly well on the PC, but the pedals aren't brilliant. So you just have to wait and see whether it will work on both platforms. If it does, then it's going to be a success of a wheel. If it's only on the Xbox 360, I don't know how popular it will be, because obviously the Xbox 360 is coming to the end of its lifespan also, so people might be a bit wary of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And they also said in the trailer that you will get new sensations, so they may have probably most likely tweaked the force feedback model in it. But, I mean, it only had 270 degrees of rotation, which is considered not a lot nowadays, unfortunately. But we'll see what happens. I think when I was first going to get a proper steering wheel, apart from a Mad Catz one, it was going to be that one purely because it looked great. And then I realised, okay, no, because it probably won't be as great as I expect. And I went with the G27. But if they can fine-tune this, give it a new force feedback model, make it feel nicer, look nicer, play nicer almost, and just tweak everything that was wrong with the last one, then I think they could be definitely onto a better wheel there.
I mean, with it being 270 degrees rotation only, that sounds like almost a console only wheel, because 270 degrees of rotation is plenty for somebody who's used to a controller. Speaking from experience, I went from a controller to a steering wheel, and I found it very, very difficult, even with 200 degrees rotation. And I've only just now moved to 300 degrees after about a year of using a wheel. So 270 is going to be plenty for people who are used to a controller.
Absolutely. Now, on to the final bit of product news, and this isn't so much sim racing as opposed to what it could do for sim racing. It's a virtual reality headset called Rift, and it's made to challenge the Wii. There's no real sort of publicity on it at the moment, despite a couple of interviews. However, there will be a model at Gamescom. To get hold of one, you need a $300 donation from the Kickstarter, and then that will get you kind of the game developer status. And then it's still in beta at the moment, but it's basically, you know, those things you see in films, the virtual reality goggles. But what it's made to do is a new way to play PC games. Okay, so at the moment people are using their triple screen monitors, you've got the projectors, you've got the curve monitors. This is going to add something new. It's currently being shown with Doom 3 at Gamescom. But so whilst that could be awesome, imagine if, you know, guys like iRacing or R-Factor 2, Assetto Corsa, people like that could think, hang on a minute, if we can get behind this, that's going to create something totally new that's not been done, let alone in sim racing before, but in games. If you could have a cockpit view, but with it, you know, fixed to your eyes, you see nothing else but the screen on, you know, virtual reality goggles, that whilst it will be expensive, I'm sure it will bring a lot to sim racing.
Absolutely. I did read about this, and it's come through the Kickstarter website, and it's got plenty of funding for it and plenty of backing as well. The old problems people have had over the years with virtual reality headsets is the delay of when you move your head and the game moves with you almost, and also the peripheral vision that you normally get. People get, you know, it suspends the reality because you can't get quite the peripheral vision that you get in real life. It's quite a narrow viewpoint because it's trying to go as fast as possible to keep up with your head movements. But apparently they've managed to solve this with efficiency and faster technology. They've got like 105-degree perspective as opposed to 40, what other ones you used to have, and a faster reaction time to it. So, it's looking promising. It's got, as I say, it's got plenty of backing. And if you got backing from people like ID, then it must be pretty decent.
Absolutely. I mean, especially as well, if you go to sort of a gaming convention such as Gamescom and you see a virtual reality headset, it's going to be the best thing, you know, that you could imagine. And if you link those two together with sim racing, especially, like I said, with the head tracking on PC monitors is a bit flaky. You've got guys that have got it nailed. My friend spent like hours and hours trying to get his work and it wouldn't happen. It depends what equipment you have, that sort of thing. But if you can have head tracking on, you know, virtual reality goggles, it would be fantastic, honestly. So it would bring something really new to this sort of sim racing community, and I'm sure a lot of people would love to get their hands on it.
Yeah, and I could look even more stupid in front of my sister now when I'm racing.
And again, that also kind of brings a little bit of portability to it. You won't have to no longer be sat at a desk in like your own sort of nerd station, as I call them, you know, where you've got your big metal tubings, you've got your triple monitors, the wheel and everything. You could simply just get a sofa stand, put it on, you put the wheel on, and then sit on the sofa, you know, listen to a bit of Radio 1 and play the virtual reality as well. So it could bring a more casual approach to it, as opposed to the hardcore sim sort of rigs you get.
Perhaps, but of course it depends how long the lead is from the computer to your head. So that is going to be wireless.
Okay, so that just about rounds out the product news then. So we go on to the league roundup. We've had two, obviously, major leagues this week then. Formula Sim Racing, Scott, I know you commentated on that one with me. Morgan yep. Moran finally got a victory. It's been a long time. He would have had one in Hungary, but of course, there's still a lot of debate over whether that should have been taken away or no. We've all expressed our views on it, but it was taken away due to a rather intense battle with Bonacquise, to say the least. But the big factor at Valencia this past week was that Bonacquise was away on holiday. So it was just simply left for Morgan Moran to just do the job he knows he can and get a bit of redemption for what happened in Hungary. And indeed he did. He stormed just from the start, got pole position. And it's not like, you know, Quis was behind him in the race and got second. Then he only took 6 points out. He took a massive 25 points out of the title lead, which literally just rendered one of Bono Quis's victories useless. So, you know, we still got, I think, 9 races left in the season. So it's definitely heating up now. Fuite, of course, on 168 points, and Moran on 126. You can see the whole top 10 on your screen now in the podcast. And as we go into Spa, it's going to be a very kind of exciting round, I think.
Absolutely. I think really, in terms of Valencia, I think really, unless he's had a disconnection or he'd made an uncharacteristic error, I think the win for Moran was never really in doubt. I think obviously everyone can see that he is a very fast driver. He is obviously definitely, he's one of the best ones out there in FSR. I think definitely one of the other drivers we have to mention is, of course, the driver that stood in for him, which is Jack Keighley. Now, he finished 30. He was on course for a second place, but I actually found out, obviously, in the highlights package, which Sion Abisi goes ahead and produces a Formula Sim Racing, which is always very excellent, I have to say. I actually found out that the reason why he slowed down on the pit strike and allowed Rasmus Tali, who was immediately behind him, to take second place was because apparently, I think it was if he'd finished third, he would have been in the top 10 for the points tally, and therefore, if he'd done that, he wouldn't have been allowed into the World Series anymore. That's what I believe and what I heard. So that's the reason why he had to relinquish that second place. But still the third place, and definitely he put on a fantastic drive to at least hold on to that second place for all that time until the pit straight out of the last corner. And I think in terms of the race itself, I think it was definitely one of the more entertaining races that we've seen around Valencia, both in sim racing and in real life, because there was that huge train of cars in the middle of the field with top drivers like Peter Berlat, Jim Parisis, John Eric Saxon was in there as well. Who else? Jeffrey Wrightville, and just mixed in there with also a couple of the Silver Line guys as well. It was a fantastic traffic jam to watch. It was a brilliant battle between them, and of course there were incidents such as the incident between Van der Linden and Hoffman down towards the end of the second sector, which was pretty dramatic, and I think both blamed each other, I think, on that one. But I think overall it was a very decent race, and I think that Moran knows that I'm not quite sure I think Ruiz is going to be back for Spa, but if he is, he knows essentially that victory, if anything was to happen to Bono, which I think looking at his ability and his speed overall, is, if I'm honest, off the top of my head, very unlikely. But I think if anything wants to happen to East, I think he'll know that not being in Valencia may be a key turning point, because Moran took what was effectively an easy victory, and no disrespect to Rasmus or to Jack at all. But it was a very easy victory. As you said, that's 25 points that renders one of his previous victories obsolete. Now, if you can imagine, if Moran's victory hadn't been taken away, that gap would have been smaller. It would have been 3 wins to, I think it must have been round about, I think we see 6, I think it is now. I think we're going to round 10 now. So I think that Moran just has to keep plugging away and getting those race wins and getting those fantastic results on the podium. And just, I think, while he's fast, just maybe not take one or two so many risks as he normally would do. I know it's getting to the end of the season, but I think that Huis is the one that's being chased by Moran here. So it's Huis that's a bit more under pressure than Moran is. Moran knows what he has to do, and he has to just keep applying that pressure and keep just staying behind Huis and finishing in front of him if he can. And I think overall, if a championship plate goes down to the wire, which at the moment I'm not quite sure about, but if it goes down to the wire in the final race, then it's going to make for one hell of a season finale between those two.
Absolutely, and don't forget that...
Sorry, it must be quite depressing, though, for Moran, because he's taken a win where Bonahuis wasn't there, and yet he's still a whole 42 points behind in the championship. That's pretty. It's pretty galling. If I was Moran, you know, I'd be happy I'd taken the win, but it would be taken away because, you know, Hayes wasn't there. So, but to be 42 points behind still after taking a win where Hayes got no points at all, that's I'd be pretty depressed if I was Morgan.
Yeah, it's a big ask as well. I mean, everybody knows that, you know, how good Bonahuis is. You know, otherwise he wouldn't be a double world champion. And we've seen this kind of 2-year dominance. And it's only now in terms of this season that he's really had a kind of fight for it, I think. And now while Moran is putting the pressure, as you said, there have been a couple of mistakes. Like if you think back to Canada, where he had the brake failure, and he was definitely on to take a couple of points out of it. But it's such a shame. I mean, that's just sim racing at the end of the day. But we've still got, you know, a really exciting second half of the season. If not for the title race, you've got this huge midfield battle now. You know, you've got the likes of Giorgio Boldi, Peter Berlach, as you said, Jeffrey Rietveld coming in. It's going to be a very heated second half of the season. So don't forget, the actual race is at Spa this weekend, and you can catch that live on simrace.tv at 16 GMT. I'm sure myself, Scott and Nick will be commentating on that one.
Just a quick note, I'm actually not going to be there because I'm going to be at Snetterton on Sunday to watch the British Touring Cars. So unfortunately, I'm not going to be there to watch that race, but it'll be yourself and Nick, I believe. But yeah, I should be, as weird as it sounds, I should be thinking of you whilst you're in the commentary box, whilst I'm watching the cars at Spa. I should be definitely having some fun in the sun watching Jason Plaisa hopefully take a few race victories. But yeah, ooh, Spa this weekend.
Like Neil.
I hope it rains. No, I'm joking.
No, forecast looks sunny. So then again, whenever we ever trusted the weather over here in Britain, it's sunny 1 minute, it's pissing down rain. Excuse me. Apologies for that. It's pouring down rain, should I say, over the next. Apologies for that.
Yeah. Okay, so on to the next league then. Obviously, Touring Pro.
You've just ruined Liam's squeaky clean image there, Scott.
Okay.
Scott leaves the call.
I'll get my coat now. I'll leave. Anyway.
All right. So on to the next league then. Obviously, Touring Pro Series, the World Supertech Series, got underway last week, and GTMEA continued their sort of early dominance. Ivar Kalamies won 3 races in a row, but it did come down to the final corner on the final lap with his teammate Tommy Nilsson, who on the final lap really gave him a run for his money. It was side by side across the line. Kalamies just taking the victory. And then in a second race that evening, it was actually his teammate Tommy Nilsson who took the victory. So it's definitely heating up. GT Omega seem to have got this now then. So overall as a team, they've won all the races so far. But, you know, Kalamies finally had his race streak broken. Obviously, the big news that week, Jesper Talborg made his debut in the series. And he's already up to 12th out of 46 in the standings. So if he's not a title contender, he's definitely going to shake up the midfield and really sort of perhaps stop people getting some major points and possibly, you know, jump in there and I think shock a few people and maybe put them out of a decent position.
Well, he's not going to shock anybody. I don't think he is he is the most successful driver in Touring Pro Series history. Yeah, he's definitely going to stop me getting points because in the first race, he managed to spin me around and get ahead of me. And then in the second race, we had a very unlikely, I guess, for actually doing that. It's the first time I've noticed that in a while that he's done that, actually. And in the second race, me and him had a great battle for about 18 laps, just passing and repassing until he pulled the Kalamies on me. At the final corner, he pressed the push to pass and got past right to the death. But it was a great event, Liam. Obviously, you were there and you were commentating. And there was a massive, massive field, the biggest field ever seen in-game stock car around Caritiba. 41 cars coming down to turn one was pretty crazy. It's like an never-ending stream of cars through that first complex of corners. And there was some great battling, of course, throughout the field. In the midfield, you've obviously got the Wiesenmullers and the Butchers and the Hendersons coming through, fighting with people like Talborg and Juntz and Simons and Alexander Senne and Nete Nascimento, of course, from Brazil. So it really was a fantastic race. And also what's been key this season so far is people who have dominated in other series in game stock car are coming here and finding it a bit more of a struggle. So definitely showing the strength of the Touring Pro Series at the moment in that particular league.
Yeah, absolutely. So Kalamies still leads the championship on 117 points from Nilsson on 103. Yourself, Ryan, you know, 69 points in third place, just beating Chris Butcher on 64. So obviously that race is tonight, so you won't want to miss that one. That will be on touringproseries.com/broadcast. So how's your testing for this week going into this one?
Not very well. I'm not enjoying the track at all. We're at Velo Park tonight. The broadcast starts at 21:20 GMT. It's 20 past 10 UK, 20 past 11 in Europe, and obviously a bit different for Brazil and USA and Canada. But it's a bit it's a tricky track. It's a difficult track to get the handle on, and I don't seem to have got it so far. So don't look out for me to bruise too much tonight.
Well, are you calling our bluff and you end up on pole position? We'll have to wait and see.
I wish I was calling your bluff. I wish I was calling the bluff. Obviously, we've got the V8 supercars next week as well at Torren Park. 18th of August, that's happening. So we're going to round 8 there. So just 3 rounds to go. We've got Torren Park, Sydney Park, and then Bathurst as the finale. And of course, Levesque mounted a charge in the championship. He won again at Simmons Plains, so that's 2 in a row. He's still 60 points behind Jesper, and the points are very close. It's difficult to make that many up, but any slip up from Jesper Talbot, that is, and William Levesque will be right there for that. So, and again, great battles again Simmons playing. A new person on pole position, Kevin Brent's taking pole position there. So, Adrian Holm taking second place as well, showing speed that he's not shown throughout the season so far. He's been disappointed this season, actually, Adrian Holm, and he got second place at Simmons Plains, so that was encouraging for him, I'm sure, and Kevin Brent taking pole as well. Although, unfortunately, he was taken out in an accident with Andreas Loeffler. Andreas Loeffler, much of a nemesis of most of the field in V8 supercars, has been very quick, but very much of a loose cannon, I'm sure people would agree. And unfortunately, that means he's now no longer in the series. But again, it's nice to say, 18th of August, Oran Park, that's a Saturday, 18:45 GMT, you can tune in. And myself and Ivo Simons will be calling that for you.
Awesome. Now, obviously, big name there was William Levesque, so we've seen him. And, of course, he is the previous Clio's champion, but he won't be racing this season, I believe.
No, he can't race, unfortunately. Last season, he was not really working very much, so he was able to, you know, jump in a race. Obviously, the Clio's aimed towards the EU time. It's been on a weekday and at EU evening. Of course, he's in Canada. So by the time he finishes work, the race will be almost, you know, the event will almost finish. So unfortunately, he's not racing. On the Clio's front, though, a great video made by Danny Asbury, Liam, as I'm sure both of you have watched.
And
that's really whet the appetite for the season ahead. Wouldn't you agree, Scott?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, just another quick note: is that As you've really made sort out, Ron, I should be commentating on the virtual clears myself, and I'm actually looking really forward, looking forward to that, because looking at the video, it's a fantastically put together video by Danny. I have to give credit to him; that was fantastic, and especially telling the story of the battle that went on. I think was it at Verano between I forget the names now. It was a fantastic battle that went on, which effectively was the championship deciding battle, and the kind of, if you like, the banter that was going on in the forums between the drivers, kind of back and forth. It looks like a really fun series. I mean, obviously, I've started now to dip my waters in terms of commentary into touring cars. I'm doing a couple of touring car series at the moment, so, and Virtual Clears looks absolutely fantastic. So, I'm very much looking forward to that. I mean, what's even more more pleasing is that first round's at my home circuit. It's going to be at the new Snetterton 300 circuit, which I'm actually really looking forward to. So, it should be a pretty awesome series to cover from now until November.
Yeah, if you want to catch the video, for those people who have not seen it, you can just go to the Touring Pro Series YouTube channel. It's just youtube.com/Touring Pro Series. That's easy to find. And it's the headline on that channel, so very easy to find indeed.
Yeah, I'll definitely put a link in the description to that one. It's definitely one of those things which makes you want to sim race. You know, if you're having a bit of a lack of sim racing, or you know, you haven't really picked up your wheel in a while, you watch that video, it'll just make you want to jump into a sim and drive countless laps, because it really does sort of get you going. But I mean, I'll be myself,
it
I think, and
depressed.
Ryan.
It makes me depressed, I have to say.
But I mean, I'm sure, you know, Ryan Callum will be racing.
And Irene.
And I'd say racing. I'll be more patiently driving around, trying not to kill anyone. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. You know, obviously, that starts very soon. We've got the big pre-season event at Essington. So how's your testing for that gone, Ryan?
Well, that's the pre-qualification event is at Essington, and that's the pre-qualification takes place over the weekend of the 24th and 26th. And as a previous top three championship finisher, I don't have to take part in that, thankfully. So I guarantee a position in the season anyway. But several people have been on there and practicing. We got some more names coming as well. Stoffel van Doorn's going to be racing as my teammate, and of course everyone knows how quick he is, of course. And you've got people like Dan Allison coming in as well, Miguel Nato and Francisco Villar coming across. So we've got some newer, even bigger names coming in. So it looks like next season will be even more competitive, which I'm not sure whether I'm pleased about or upset about.
I'm pretty sure I'm upset, because I think the chances now have gone from slim to none of me making it through pre-quali.
Can I just ask, on this occasion, is your Claire going to be pink by any chance?
I can't reveal anything yet, but it's 8%. But chances are it will be.
For those people who don't know, Liam takes part in the Sim Racing Online Touring Car Series, and the colour that was allocated to his team is bright pink. And so him and two other drivers race in bright pink BMW. So there's nothing to be embarrassed about. Obviously, anyone can have any colour they want, but of course, that just happened to be the colour that Liam was assigned. So it's one thing for sure, you can't miss him out on track, that's for sure.
Yeah, and no one's had an epileptic fit that I'm aware of yet, so it's going in the right direction.
Happy days.
I thought it was, that was just your driving, Liam.
That's
I'm
his
not
connection.
That bad.
That was it. That's his excuse.
That's his connection. That's what it is. Lagging everywhere.
I believe, Ryan, you've also got a little announcement to make.
Well, we've got a couple of announcements, mate. Just before that final announcement, we do have a... Oh, excuse me. We do have a competition to give away. We're giving away the Sim Raceway SRWS1 wheel, which you can use as a standalone wheel by itself. It's a wireless wheel for the console or for the PC. And I'm not sure how a wireless wheel will feel, you know, but it's several people say they love it. And but you can also use it as an add-on for your G25 or your G27 or other wheel. Plug it onto those, and that's had rave reviews for that sort of thing. It's got lots of buttons on it. Looks very nice. The build is fantastic. And Touring Pro Series is giving one away. We actually have three to give away over the next 3 months. We're not sure how we're going to give away the next two just yet. We might actually give them away for actual achievement rather than through a competition. But that's easy to enter. You just go to the Touring Pro Series Facebook page and you see the details on there. Facebook.com/Touring Pro Series. Basically, just answer a very, very simple question and then send in your TPS username to the email address quoted there. So that's wheels worth €120. So it's easy to win, easy to enter, and no purchase, completely free. So what's not to like? And of course, Liam has entered that as well, haven't you, Liam?
Indeed, I have 72 times. No.
He's keen, we'll give him that.
Fine, yeah, it'll be definitely, I think it's definitely a good wheel. I mean, we've seen, you know, loads of countless videos on YouTube of people mounting them on their G-Series wheels, as you said. And for the people that don't want to fork out the money on a T500 with the Ferrari rim, or the Fanatec Club Sport, it's a nice, it's not so much a lower down version, but it's a cheaper version, which has got that, you know, G27 feel to it. It's got the force feedback the same. All you're changing is the rim and adding about 17 more buttons.
Yeah, the buttons look fantastic, actually. I have to say, from what I've seen of it, and it's looking good. But on to the other announcement, Liam. And so Liam's very excited about this, aren't you, Liam?
I am indeed.
as everybody knows, the Riser Studios are bringing out, of course, the mini challenge cars for Game Stock Car. They race in real life from Brazil also, and they're bringing them out for Game Stock Car probably in the next week or 2 weeks or so. And the Touring Pro Series have a gap in our league at the moment after the cancellation of the AGTC league. And put two and two together and you'll find out that we are going to be running a virtual mini challenge league, which will be taking place on late Saturday nights in the EU, which will be early Sunday mornings for everybody in Australia. And also, evenings for people in the USA. So we're trying to capture as much of the audience in the entire world as possible, as we always try to do in general. Of course, because the EU have the Clio series, so we're trying to give the rest of the world their own car series as well. So I'm very much looking forward to that, looking forward to racing in that.
Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, awesome.
The details for that will go up this weekend. And if you go to touringproseries.com/forum, you'll be able to see all the details on there. So this weekend, hopefully, we'll have all those details out and people can start to plan ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely going to be a competitive league. Obviously, you've already got the Clios, but going into, you know, the mini challenge, minis have always been fun to drive. You put 30 odd drivers going around, you know, Interlagos, for instance, it's going to be a lot of fun. So you have to see what happens in terms of, you know, the calendar, the drivers that sign up, but it's definitely got a lot of promise, and I'm sure it's going to be a very successful league.
Absolutely, and I'll be racing in that one as well, so anybody who wants to come along and bash on one of the TPS co-founders, then feel free. Both of us were racing, actually, both me and Keith, so you can all come along and beat us.
So on to the final league, then. This is a new league. Now, obviously, we do cover, you know, probably the big leagues. Now, this is a new league that's just started with a very unique feature. Sim Racing Pro is the name, so you can just Google that. You'll find the website. Now, they're a GTR2 league, and they run races between 90 minutes and 3 hours in Race 07. So Race 07, GTR2, all those sort of games. You have the LMP cars and the GT3s. But the big factor, you may think, okay, it's just another endurance thing. They do have changing weather. The founder that actually uses the a script thing for the weather, which all the drivers are aware of, to what's going to happen during the race. But it's going to be a very unique challenge because you go in there and, you know, it could be sunny 1 minute. Knowing when the rain's going to come, you have to plan ahead as to when you go in the pits. And you don't really get that with many sims because, you know, weather, you know, you go in iRacing or R Factor, you don't really get many sort of weather options. except for the odd track temperature and things. So that's going to be really interesting. Of course, they have got some very clean professional racing, so be sure to check that out if you want to get something new from Race 07. So I think on Steam it's only £3 at the moment, so what's to lose? And I think that's just about topped off the league thing as well. So just want to quickly say a thank you to everyone who's actually watched and downloaded this. We've actually gone into the top 10 in video games within a week of the podcast being up there on podomatic.com. The podcast is now officially on iTunes. That will be uploaded every Friday, so you can go and get your fix from there, stick it in your car or on your iPods. And so I believe Scott's got a topic he wants to talk about now.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Liam. And I want to involve you two as much as possible I can on this one. And basically, I haven't really written any notes for it. I've written notes for it because mostly all in my head of what I want to talk about. And that is, I want to talk about the what seems to be the lack of publicity for the community that racing games and sim racing has. Now, what I mean by this is how it stacks up against the likes of things like FIFA and Call of Duty and stuff like Minecraft, things like that. Now, I play FIFA on the PlayStation. I watch FIFA directors, and they're very good at what they do. Don't get me wrong, they're very good at what they do. They put a lot of effort and hours in there, and they make loads of, you have got some great commentators who make videos and such. And I don't watch the Call of Duty kind of thing either. It's kind of really, obviously, but they make brilliant videos as well from what I've seen. And Minecraft's a big one as well. And it's kind of the same thing when you watch on, if anyone's familiar with Twitch.tv, if anyone doesn't know what that is, basically Twitch.tv is, it's kind of like a side channel of, I believe it's Justin TV, I think it is, which is basically, it's a site where it's basically, it's where you, it allows members to stream gameplay. And obviously the top, some of the top games, I mean, say for example, I'll do this off the cuff here, if I have a quick look on the website, see what exactly the top games are at the moment.
StarCraft.
StarCraft. StarCraft's always one. StarCraft, League of Legends. Here it is. I've got StarCraft, League of Legends, DOTA 2, Minecraft, BlazBlue, Continuum Shift, World of Warcraft. And you've got even DayZ in there, which is also pretty excellent. Call of Duty's in there, Max Payne 3, Diablo 3. But all those kind of games. One distinct thing that's missing there. Obviously, FIFA's pretty popular as well on an evening when the big FIFA directors start streaming. But one thing which really annoys me a little bit is the fact that the sim racing community and the racing game community as a whole is pretty massive in itself. Obviously, you've got all these racing leagues here with which run on iRacing or R Factor or Racer 7 or GTR2 or whatever kind of sim it may be. And then you've got the other leagues which run, obviously, Forza, F1 2011. They run Gran Turismo. Some even play stuff like Need for Speed, things like that. What annoys me a little bit is the fact that it doesn't seem to be that no one's really push the community to the same kind of publicity level in terms of things like YouTube and Twitch.tv as have, say, for example, those on FIFA or Call of Duty. And that's not to let anyone like yourself, right, or anyone who promotes a league. That's the shame, because no one really, apart from us in the sim racing community, no one gets to see these excellent drivers, really, or hardly anyone knows about them. And you've got leagues like Touring Pro Series, Formula Sim Racing, other ones that I know, the GPWC is brilliant as well, Sim Racing Online, you've got the iRacing leagues as well, obviously even NASCAR's it got a sanctioned an iRacing league, and obviously you've got the officially sanctioned IndyCar one as well, you've got the officially sanctioned Grand Am League as well, and I think that there's not really that many proper, and for that matter popular, directors for sim racing and racing as a whole. I think maybe because maybe those people who go on YouTube, they maybe don't know how, not to say they're ignorant, but they don't know how to understand properly how to properly promote the channel in terms of getting it out there. Obviously, I know obviously like all the leagues have their own channels. I know that Simon Adebisi, as I mentioned, does a fantastic job making the highlights videos for Formula Sim Racing, and he does a brilliant job every single time. He gets them out, say, 2 or 3 days after the race is done, and they're brilliant recap videos. I've watched them all back to 2010. And they're fantastic. Touring Pro Series does fantastic stuff as well. Race Department as well does that as well. GPWC does the recaps as well with their full broadcast. So does also Sim Racing Online. But there's no kind of directors like you get in FIFA and COD there to kind of, I don't know, just bring the sim racing community and the race community together a bit more, to kind of promote it a bit more. I'm not saying it would go on to the same level as FIFA or COD ever, if you like, but just to give it a bit more publicity. Because if you think about it, if you look at FIFA, right, or the football gaming community, there's only two major games, right? There's FIFA and there's Pro Evo. Looking at the first-person shooter game community, the only two major ones you've seen, really, the major one's Call of Duty, and then you've got, like, Battlefield, and that's it. Look at this racing and the sim racing community. What have you got to offer? You've got, as all the games I mentioned before, you've got Gran Turismo, Forza, F1. You've got the Colin McRae series, which now turned to Dirt. You've got Need for Speed. You've got, to a certain extent, in some cases, if you like, an aside, Burnout. You've got games like a NASCAR series that's coming through as well now. You've got the WRC series. You've also got, for PC racing, you've got the Race series. You've got the GTR series. You've got iRacing, R-Factor, Assetto Corsa coming through. You've got Project Cars that's coming through as well, which looks fantastic. You've got Netcar. You've got Auto Club Revolution coming through. There's so much variety in the racing and sim racing game community that it boggles the mind to make me think, why does no one exploit this a bit more? Why are there no proper directors out there like the FIFA and COD communities? I think really this should be like some kind of a call. I'm not saying that someone should be trying to be martyrs and try and lead the charge to make sim racing and racing a bit more popular up there in terms of the whole gaming community. Just, I think, you know, things need to be a bit more. People need to be a bit more aware of the communities that are around and the exposure that needs to be made in terms of these fantastic leagues that are out there. Because I mean, you know, I think in some cases, sim racing can be as popular as, in some cases, it is as popular as real life racing. Just that I think that because it's not, and no offense to anyone who does also do a league or anything, because it's not really promoted to as a mass audience or maybe appeals to the same kind of audience as something like Minecraft or FIFA or Call of Duty, I think maybe people don't really take to it as much because they don't see it promoted very often like that. And it's a shame because obviously with all these fantastic leagues, you don't see them. And I think really more needs to be done. I mean, I think really I've talked enough about that. So I mean, I don't know, Ryan, what do you think? Do you think there's the truth to that? Or do you think there's anything that can be done to make it a bit more publicly aware, do you think?
Well, it's almost the problem is that there's too much variety there, because as you mentioned, there are so many different games for that, and then for other ones, there's only like two or three, which concentrates the audience as well, and concentrates the amount of people working on that particular game, whereas you got spread apart quite a lot, at the moment in sim racing. In terms of, for me as well, it does surprise me because the racing broadcasts are as close to real life, TV broadcasts than anything out there. They're much closer than no one ever watches shooting in real life like that in first person. Maybe you could say that the FIFA is close to it, but you know the physics aren't quite the same as a real person moving around. No. The physics look pretty similar when the car goes around the track. And it does surprise me because it does, out of all video games being live broadcasted, sim racing looks the most realistic and the easiest to relate to for me.
It does.
I completely agree with you. I think, but if you look at certain broadcasts, when you have the big 24-hour events, they do pull in up to, 500-600 viewers. But it's getting that consistent audience that will tune in all the time to all your videos. I mean, that's what I'm almost trying to do with the podcast, just get a new audience in there, bring them in, see what they feel about it, and just get a community going for them to tune into. Let's bring in, Land of Hope and Glory and get a motivational speech going. But I mean, it's
got the Olympic torch in his hand.
I just want to give something back to the community because they deserve it. You know, they work so hard, guys like Simon, yourself, all the commentators, all the drivers that produce the media videos, like Danny Asbury and people, and they don't really get enough publicity for them. And by doing something like this, which can showcase all of that, will hopefully bring them a bit more publicity. But we'll have to see what happens. I mean, I completely agree with you, but it's the guys, it's the consoles typically are more popular than the PC. So a lot more people will watch console gameplays as opposed to PC. And with the variety in the sim racing audience, you've got your guys on Forza and F1 and things like that. But then you've got the guys on iRacing and the hardcore sim guys. If you can pull those together somehow and just get them into one place and to watch a video, then I think you're going to have a bit of a more success rate if you can feature them all. I think Inside Sim Racing do a good job. But it's about just covering everything that the guys want to see.
That's the difficulty, isn't it, as well, though? Because the console is more popular, the console is a lot more difficult to broadcast. So that's... there's a key problem right there.
I think one point which I was thinking about earlier on was, I think you can put, I hope you agree with me on the fact essentially that if you play as a game on FIFA, okay, you can't go and you can't then go and translate. And if you say if you play like Real Madrid on FIFA, you can't then go out and start doing step overs like Cristiano Ronaldo. Same with playing Call of Duty, you can't just go and pick up a gun and then go and start shooting at a target range or something. But the things with sim racing, you can go and race to somewhere like Silverstone or Brands Hatch, and then you can go and take your real car there, and you can actually go and race on and drive on a track there on Silverstone or Brands Hatch. So, and it's the kind of that relation between what you do in the game or in the sim, if you like, towards real life. Because essentially, because, you know, it's not a, like I said, anyone who thinks they can play FIFA and instantly start playing like Messi or Ronaldo or Rooney, that ain't going to happen. And same with Call of Duty. You're not going to go ahead and start picking up a gun and start going into a war zone just like that and thinking you're an amazing soldier. It's just not going to happen, okay? And of course, at the same time, I'm not saying that anyone who then picks up a similar racing game can then go onto a circuit like Silverstone or Brands Hatch with their own car and think they're Lewis Hamilton or Jenson Button. But you can relate to it a lot more than you can with the other games. I think that's really, I think, some cases what only us real hardcore sim racers and kind of race sim racing fans really understand. I think that if it's communicated a bit more to those who maybe are a bit more either casual console gamers or only play racing games or sims on the console, then maybe it would appeal a bit more. And but I do think that channels like, obviously, like Liam's channel where the podcast is hosted, and even people like other two ones I've seen are Moto Games TV, who does a fantastic job of promoting like game trailers and that, and gameplay and that kind of thing. And also, as you said, Inside Sim Racing has done a fantastic job to promote the sim racing. I think they've got about something like 30,000 subscribers, and their videos pull in between something like 20,000 to 60,000 views. And so they should, because they're fantastically produced. They've given honest opinion and feedback on like sim racing rigs, on wheels, on basically on things like add-ons, things like that, and more importantly, on the actual sims of the games themselves. I think really there just needs to be more kind of independent directors, if you like, independent people out there on YouTube who, you know, first of all, I think needs to kind of get, if you like, not to sound a bit too arrogant or anything, but need a bit of an education as to how to go about marketing, starting about on YouTube and then marketing it properly. I'm not saying that either like people like yourself, Liam, or Inside Sim Racing don't do it properly, because obviously, you know, because obviously they get in the views in and they get the popularity base. But, you know, I think everyone always looks for improvement, I think, and whether they're a director or someone who watches, or either a broadcast on Twitch or watches a video on YouTube. And, you know, everyone needs to be constantly improving. Obviously, you know, I think everyone does. I think everyone strives to constantly improve. Because if you just if you plateau somewhere and you just are content with it, essentially, then really, if you're trying to promote a channel, it's not going to go anywhere. And obviously, if you just keep trying to push the boundaries and keep trying to, you know, come up with new things. And I see that with some people who direct the FIFA videos and direct the COD videos, try and do something new. And credit to them. Because they put in a lot of work, they put in the hours, and they put in the fantastic video compilations of goals they've scored or the series they put together. And it's hard work. It's not just like you can put together a video an hour just by putting some gameplay in. There's some people who work literally, at some cases, maybe a week, maybe even 2 weeks, trying to put a compilation together, a video. Because it's so much effort trying to get the gameplay on, then having the device to record it, and then having to go ahead and then put it in the editing software, then putting it all together, rendering it, and then uploading it onto YouTube. I mean, it's a lot more difficult than it sounds. I mean, I'm hoping to maybe get a channel set up. I'm just trying to think of a proper name to put towards it, but kind of like a marketable name to put towards it. But, and I want to focus it on just sim racing and racing games. And again, I'm not going to call myself like a martyr or a savior for the sim racing community, because that's just big-headed. But just someone who can maybe just, I think, relate a bit more to, you know, the average kind of racing gamer. Just maybe just say, you know, obviously, just bring a bit of energy to it, as does these podcasts. Bring a bit of energy to it, you know, bring some information to it, and just basically just involve the community as much as possible. And just bring them a bit more together. And I think, as Liam said, if there was a way to bring the kind of the hardcore sim racers and the casual kind of just like normal racing gamers on the console, just bring them together into one kind of place, and so they can get on with each other. And just, I'm not saying they don't, but they just be in the same place and kind of enjoy the same content together. I think that would really be a great step forward. But I think that there's a lot of people that kind of just overlook the sim racing community as a whole, because they probably look at it and think it's alienated and think, well, I think one point, I think in some cases they look at it and think it's too expensive. And I think you probably would agree, because in some cases the wheels are like £200 a piece. But then again, they're fantastic quality, so why wouldn't they be? So there's a lot of points that you can cover on that one, but I think really it's a case that it needs to be people out there just need to kind of just have an idea and then just go into it and have the ability and the passion to, you know, go forward and start a stream on Twitch and then promote it, or start a series on YouTube and then promote it properly. Because I think if people did put the effort in, and obviously when I looked to start my YouTube channel, I certainly would put the effort in. I wouldn't do like 5 videos and then give up, because you're not going to get 1,000 followers overnight on YouTube.
That's the thing. That's the thing about, you know, you can get people to do maybe 1, maybe 2 videos, but to do almost the grind of producing videos, you know, over an extended period of time is unusual. And I mean, it's the same in organizing leagues. You see leagues come and go, and only the select few, you know, are pushed forward and can keep progressing over a number of years. So that's a big thing there, is getting people to do it consistently. Once you do it consistently, people, you know it's going to be there, and they're more likely to go and watch it rather than just going on the off chance that, oh, maybe there'll be one.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's a very good point, because people make so much effort. Just look at guys like Simon and stuff. Simon, as you said, for the FSR videos, he put a few pictures on Facebook of just the multiple screenshots he takes to create these videos. And it looks so difficult, and they can take it up to a good couple days, literal, in terms of hours work, you know, 40 hours at some point. But people don't realise that. And if you want to get into the YouTube community and you start pumping out these videos, but you think, oh, I'm on 7 subscribers, 30 views, whatever, then and just give up, then you very rightly point, you're not going to give it. You need to put hard work in. You only get in what you put. No, you only put in what, I don't know. It's one of those metaphorical.
You only get out what you put in.
That's very true. Then it's very true. I mean, there's a guy which I follow on Twitter. He's had like two. He's tried to do YouTube a couple of times in the last week or so. He's had like 3 channels in the last week, and then he just wrote on Twitter, "Oh, I'm not getting anywhere on YouTube. I'm giving up." And I just thought, but you've just started. You've only had a channel for like 3 or 4 days, and you expect to have like so many followers just like that. It's not going to happen. As you said, you need to have the passion for it, and to be have the ability to sustain the channel and to stick at it and to promote it in the right way, and then as a result then just keep the subscriber base going and just keep them entertained. Because if you just give up after like 5 days or a week, well, that's, you know, that's just false hope. You're not going to get that many followers.
It takes 5 days or a week for me to make 1 video.
Exactly.
Video trailers I've created for the series, you know, for V8s and WSS and ATCC and Clio's, they often take me at least 3 days just to capture the stuff and put it all together. And people, you know, it is hard work, and it's often very hard work. People go just take it for granted. Like Yara Venari creates all the highlight videos for us, and people just go, where are the videos? Where are the videos at if they're like a couple of days too long? They don't realise that, you know, these hours and hours of work goes into these sort of things.
No.
I think that's the thing as well. But quickly going back to what you said about, you know, going to drive Silverstone and things, Ron Dennis, you know, of course, previous McLaren boss, actually referred to this generation as the PlayStation generation. You've got guys like Dale Earnhardt, like Tony Stewart, like Lewis Hamilton. Scott Speed races with his fans on iRacing. He just sets up lobbies. You can go in there. I've seen it a couple of times and unfortunately missed them. But all these professional racers use things like iRacing as training, because it's the closest to real life you can get. And for racing fans who can't afford, you know, £700 for a go-kart plus all the spares to take it on a lorry to go everywhere and stuff, it costs so much money to actually get started in proper racing. It's a cheap alternative for them, and a lot of people don't realize that, and they don't see that this is the closest you'll get, sort of thing. And so many people sort of underestimate this community, and it really is something that needs to be broadcasted, I think, and that people can start, you know, they just think it's like a game, but this is the closest to real life you can get. And you've seen it before. I think it was it may have been Gregor Hutu, who actually won the iRacing World Championship, went to the Skip Barber School, and he was able to drive the Skip Barber like a professional driver purely because of iRacing.
Yeah, that's correct. I think it may have been a Star Mazda, I think he drove. And yeah, I think it was a Star Mazda he drove there. And it's interesting because I guess the one thing, unless you have all this money to spend on like a proper rig and everything, I mean, I mean, just pure example, I went to the Autosport show in the NEC back in January, and they had a very small kind of iRacing booth there with two to these rigs. And I'm not kidding. They're fantastic rigs. They've got all the proper, like, all this nice really chrome tubing around it, really nice bucket seat, G27 setup, triple screen, you know, D-Box simulator thing, the lot. But the rig itself was literally £15,000 each. And it's a proper rig. And unless you've got one of those, I think you obviously, you've got the vibration, the force feedback in the ball. But if you haven't got all the proper stuff behind you, I can understand what people mean is that it's when you don't actually get the proper sensation. And I think in some cases, that's why, I think if I remember correctly, actually Gregor Hutu actually was sick because he felt sick because
yeah, he was sick in his helmet, yeah.
Yeah, because the reason was because he'd only been sim racing essentially with a wheel and pedals and not in an actual kind of in an actual car, his body, he obviously, because he, no offense, but he hadn't actually trained for it, but his body and his mind couldn't take the G-forces and the speeds. Obviously, the speeds in terms he was going, he would have related to in the game, but the actual G-forces and the sensations, he wouldn't have got apart from what he'd get back through the wheel. So, you know, I think some people will probably still look at it and think, well, you can't really relate it to racing because it's, you don't get the sensation of it. And that's true, unless you've got all the kit for it and you can afford it. But, I mean, some example, I mean, Fernando Alonso, back in 2005 and 2006, when they were first going to Turkey, he learnt the game on the circuit on the F1 game. I mean, granted, that first year he didn't have a fantastic race. I think I can't remember where he finished, maybe round about third or so, I can't remember, but... And you said other drivers like who'd use iRacing, people like Justin Wilson, AJ Allmendinger does, people like that. So, you know, real racing drivers do use this kind of software. And I think if more people knew that and related to it, then maybe essentially that maybe would raise the popularity. So, I mean, I don't know. It seems to be one of those things where if no one does anything about it, it's never going to move anywhere. So I think that some people, hopefully, if some people people listen to this, Maybe they get inspired by it and they do start their own YouTube channels. I mean, if that's the case, then that's great. That's fantastic. But you know, like I said, it's the sim racing community is not going to get anywhere if those who are either taking part or who like sim racing just listen to it and think, oh, that's a shame, and then just leave it. If they really want to feel as strongly as I suppose us three do about it, then really they would. You know, that they would happily go ahead and start doing something about the community. But I think they're really, because a lot of people are missing out on some fantastic leagues and some fantastic racing, if I'm honest.
I think, I mean, I agree with you completely. It is something, I mean, we just need that little bit of a boost now in the community. But the thing is, you've got not so much sets of people, but you've got people that care completely, when it comes to a racing game, can care completely about physics. Some who completely care about graphics, some who compare about just a casual racing game. Well, and that's always going to show a little bit of divide. People who, for instance, race hardcore iRacing, won't play anything else, won't go and watch a video on Gran Turismo. But then people who race F1, who don't know what iRacing is, won't go out that way and watch that together. But if you can just make a show, I'm not saying, you know, like this podcast, but which can get them all together and go, actually, that sounds pretty cool. Well, it's not all about that because this game does this, or my friend does this, or you can meet new people, that sort of thing, then there is an opportunity there to get this new community together and form it. Because I'm trying to break into, I know my brother's trying to do it actually, into the Call of Duty community, and he's literally working flat out and doing all these editing things. But it's not getting huge because the places have already been taken. You know, you've got the likes in Call of Duty of the FaZe Clan, for instance, and FIFA of KSI and AA9 skills, that sort of thing. Whereas in sim racing, there isn't really any huge sort of channels at the moment. You've got obviously the league channels, as you said, like the TPS one, the FSR one, but you don't really have that huge influential channel where everyone in the community unites. And if they can get that going, then I'm sure the community is going to start going places.
Yeah, most definitely. Another channel I'm going to start up is kind of hopefully a mix of the two. So obviously there were some videos that are kind of like maybe on R Factor or stuff about sim racing, or maybe like what's a good wheel to buy on a budget, or maybe like that, things like that maybe. But at the same time, it would have stuff like stuff on the console, because like I said, I'm as much as, because this is the funny thing, I have a G27. But I've got nowhere to set it up because my house where I live is fairly small, so I've got nowhere to set it up. So that's collecting dust at the moment. But how I would love to give it a go, and also have a decent and have a desktop PC, because I mean, I'm communicating through this on a laptop, and that's all I do with my stuff on a laptop with commentating and stuff. But also at the same time, so any sim racing that I can do, apart from using a PS3 controller on R Factor, which isn't the most realistic, is I have a PS3, and I do play stuff like, you know, F1 2011, Dirt 3. I play Gran Turismo as well on that, in that, those cases. Because at the moment, that's all I can really do at the moment. And stuff like iRacing, as brilliant as it is, I can't afford that because of my situation. I'm not going to go into it, of course, but anyway. You know, I think that, like you said, that channel which hopefully brings the two communities together, which has that mix of sim racing games and racing, whoever it might be, whether it's myself or whoever, if it's someone who gets inspired by listening to what we've been talking about now, I think that's definitely, if we had a few of those, that would definitely kickstart the sim racing community onto a higher level. Again, I'm not saying it'll be on the same popularity, the same level as someone like FIFA or Call of Duty or Minecraft, of course, because they've been around for ages and their channel base have had a lot longer to build up and to get there. But I think if there's some kind of movement that starts towards it, I think definitely we're going to see some. Hopefully, we can see some big change in the community, and hopefully, we can maybe see some new faces, some new people who come forward. And I think definitely, if that's the case, then I think that hopefully. Sim racing is going to get better and better, and it's going to have a brighter future.
Absolutely. I mean, all you've got to do is look at how it's propelled in the past 5 years or so with websites, you know, who deliver the news, such as Race Department, such as your Sim News Daily, that sort of thing. And
Virtual R as well, yeah.
Okay. And everyone who just, you know, can pull together on there and discuss news, you've got various forum sites, the iRacing forum sites. There are huge communities out there, but it's not like they're all pulling together, but I would rather personally have a bit of smaller community that are supportive as opposed to a large one full of people who try to dislike bots, get you false flag, that sort of thing. And I think for me, the sim racing community is a respectful one, you know, and that you're not going to have that kind of problem. You're obviously going to get the few people who dislike what you do, and I'm sure they'll all have their reasons to do so. But you, for the most part, people are open to new things within this community. And they'll be supportive, and people are, oh, I think you could do this better. I didn't really like that bit. Try this next time. As opposed to, I hate this. Stop making videos. You're horrible, for instance. You know, and that's the difference. And if you can get that sort of nice, supportive community together, then that's one where it's less of a community, more a family, because you start to relate to things together. You make friends. You get close friends. I mean, you know, for instance, Ryan, you and Keith now, you know, you run a league together. So, you know, it's always that sort of thing. And it's going to hopefully throw up some big possibilities.
Hopefully. Sorry. I just realised I was on mute for a second there because I was coughing.
No worries. So I think that just about rounds out everything. And so just to quickly, you know, look back, guys, if you're watching this or listening to this, be sure to comment, see what your views are on this community, you know, or overall on the podcast or any of the issues we've discussed today. And I just want to say a massive thank you to all of you who've watched and downloaded this, because we're in the top 1,000 podcasts overall now, and we're in the top 10 in video games. We were up to 5th yesterday, but, you know, so we're keeping on pushing it. We're getting there. And I just want to say a massive thank you to everyone who watches this and to your support. Big thank you to my guests today, Ryan Cullen and Scott Woodwiss. You've both been brilliant, and thank you for taking this out of your personal time to do this. So from me, Liam Jenkins, we'll see you on the racetrack, and we'll see you until episode 5 next Friday. So keep safe, enjoy Gamescom, be sure to keep up with all the info, and I know we've got some very, very special things planned for you guys in the next couple of weeks, so stay tuned.